Hello, and welcome to another episode of My Backstage Pass. This is your host, Lee Zimmerman, and I'm here with my producer, pal, and co-host, Billy Hubbard. And today we're really excited to have Rhys Shadd as our special guest. Great guy, great musician, and he's a pal too. Hi, Rhys, how are you?
I'm doing great, guys. It's good to talk to you.
The audience is very enthused.
We got to get them calmed down.
Yeah, we got to get them calmed down. There we go. We have complete control. So, Rhys, you're up in, as I recall, upstate New York, right?
Well, actually, now I live in Massachusetts.
But okay, I blew it. Blew the first question. Sorry.
That's fine, but we're literally 10 minutes from the border.
I mean, okay.
As New York as New England gets.
Okay. All right. Very good. How's the weather up there?
We've had some snow today.
Really?
Yeah. The 1st of November it was like half an inch, but
still.
My dog loved it. And, it makes for a beautiful treescape outside my window.
Oh, boy. I'm jealous already.
Well, come on up. You know,
I want to.
I
want to. So, you know, it sounds like a very idyllic setting, which kind of fits the mood of your music, especially your new album, your current album, which is an acoustic kind of look back at your catalog. And notice how I did a segue from the weather into the music.
That was brilliant.
It wasn't brilliant. It was brilliant. So
you must write books or something.
but you do have a current album out, which is kind of a retrospective, an acoustic album. And there's kind of a backstory about that your wife had some input into it, right? I mean, what's the story there?
Well, I mean, I've been with my wife for over 40 years. We met in high school, and she's heard me write songs, you know, for four decades now. And she's very, very low key. We're like the polar opposites. I'm all wound up and like bouncing off the walls, and she's meditating for weeks on end. And actually a week on end once a month. I mean, literally, she's really centered, and she is an incredible person to get to live with and to be with. But I'm here like writing these songs, and she hears them from the very first inkling all the way through until I'm ready to go off and get into a recording studio and record them. And when I come back from the recording studio with, you know, a bunch of tracks, I'll sit down and play them for her, and she's always kind of, oh, is that where you went? Huh. No. And it's obviously, you know, she's very sweet about it, but she's obviously a little disappointed. And I think it's because
that's sad. Like
my production style, I mean, I really like to, I've always got all these other harmonies going on in my head. I've always got all these other voicings going on in my head. So if I can find someone who can, you know, come in and play a baritone saxophone, I'm going to rope them into the studio and play them for all they're worth. That's the kind of, I mean, we call it kitchen sink productions, you know, I mean, literally. But anyway, so she's been putting up with that for, you know, I guess I've been putting out records since the early 90s.
Wow.
And this one's really, you know, kind of going back to the very, very roots of what she heard, because what she's reacting to is a kind of passion and sadness and, I think, intimacy that happens with me when I'm just alone with my guitar or my piano. And so that's what this record was about. It was just sitting down with my guitar, playing through a bunch of songs from my catalog, but also some brand new ones, and then bringing them home and hopefully getting a smile on her face. And I did. And I was like, okay. So, you know, it was literally one day in the studio. I think I ran through 25 songs.
Wow.
Maybe, you know, three times.
Wow.
So I was playing all day. And sometimes you can hear it on the record. My voice is a little more haggard than other tracks because we selected the best performances. And Pamela was, my wife was involved with actually the selection of the songs. Once she heard everything, she was like, "Ah, yeah, I like that one. Or nah, maybe not," you know? So we put together this, I put this together really with her in mind, and people have really been responding, and which has been a joy.
And the name of the album is?
Six Strings and a Story.
Very appropriate. Very appropriate. So did your wife, did Pamela get a producer credit on this? I mean, maybe she should.
I'll have you call her lawyer.
There was a long silence there. A long silence there. Okay.
She gets production credits on everything that I do in life.
Okay. As well she should. As well she should. Yeah. And again, you've been making music for over 30 years, right? I mean, it's a remarkably long time here.
I'm sitting in my home studio right now, and I'm looking up at the wall, and there is a piece of vinyl that my wife framed for me from 1983, which is my first record.
Wow, 40 years then. 40 years, yeah. Okay.
40 years, and that was I was doing session work even before that. I was recording in studios as a guitarist and bassist. I started, I guess, in 78, which is literally when I was, what is that?
Two years old. You were 2 years old. We're going to help you with that.
I think I was 14 years old when I did my first pro studio session. So, yeah.
All right. I still have socks older than you, Reese. So don't feel bad about that. That's remarkable. So, and you've, So you've recorded under a number of different pseudonyms as well. I mean, you have a lot of music out there in the world, and some of it's under Reshad, and some of it's under some alter egos, right?
Yeah, I mean, because I'm a singer songwriter first and foremost, and I started, you know, really kind of making my name in Americana in the very early years of when we were actually defining this music form as Americana. And it was still a lot more general than it is now. It's gotten more specific, I think, I think the walls have kind of narrowed in on Americana. But back in like 1996, 95, there was a guy named John Grimson out of Nashville. I don't know if you guys knew him or know him. I think he's living up in Wisconsin now. But anyway, he was one of the first guys to get, he was the person who got Gavin to do an Americana chart.
Yeah, the Gavin charts, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so, and back then he was more, it was a wider swath of music. But even then, it was, you know, an acoustic instrument somewhere in there. It's got roots influences and stuff like that. That's the kind of stuff I was writing. It was something between folk and rock, blues. And then in about 2001, I withdrew from the music industry. I kept making music, but I wasn't really trying to promote myself or anything. And I started getting gigs as a composer for film and animation and theater.
Wow.
And that stuff I was creating in my home studio by myself, which meant there was a lot of electronic, activity there. So I'd be doing samples, I'd be looping stuff, depending on the kind of music that was needed. And so it was a lot more electronic and a lot more, I think, compositional than my traditional narrative songs. So I put on a new name, and that was Fester Spunk.
Yeah, Fester Spunk.
And I did, it was kind of, you know, tongue in cheek when I was doing it, because it's, you know, okay, I'm not making a lot of money doing music for theater. It's just it's different. And I didn't want people who knew Reshad's music to go and, you know, find this stuff and be like, oh my God, he's turned into, you know, Thomas Dolby.
Yeah.
Right. You know, and I love Thomas Dolby. I'm not putting him down in any way.
Right. But it was a change of direction, obviously. Yeah, it could have been confusing. Exactly. Yeah.
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 And then I had a comedy troupe that I was doing a lot of work with. And we were basically, I don't know, do you guys have like some pals that you go out into the world and you're like maybe have a long weekend, just the guys? Do you ever do that?
We need to do
it's
that.
It's been a while. Oh, since I.
Yeah. Billy and I live vicariously through this podcast. That's okay. How we do it. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well, you know, so I've got a couple of guys that I literally grew up with, that I've been playing music with since I was a teenager. And we would go, and I've always had a studio of some type in my home. And so they would come up and my wife would be off. She's a Zen Buddhist. So she goes off literally, as I said before, for a week to meditate in silence once a month. Or that's what she says. She might just be, you know, running off to get away.
Yeah.
But the guys would come up for a weekend and we would just have the place to ourselves and we'd start playing music and we were always making fun of the music we grew up on, all the different kinds of, you know, odd country, odd rock and roll, odd heavy metal, all the stuff that we were listening to on what you would listen to on a standard radio station back in the early 70s, which could be George Jones 1 minute and, you know, Led Zeppelin the next, sure, and David Bowie the next, right?
Top 40,
Exactly. The top 40 was just it was a really wide group of genres all meshed together, right? And so we would start making fun of that and make up songs and record that. And next thing you know, we're making records as a band called Scheißfinger. And it's hysterical stuff if you walk up to it knowing that it's supposed to be funny rather than serious. I think you'd get it. But some people have heard it and been like, oh, that's what are they doing to, you know, such great old music? We're making fun of it. We're making fun of ourselves, you know. Yeah. So there's also that.
You're irreverent. Yeah.
Oh, nothing that wrong is with... like my middle name right there. Thank you so much.
Reese Irreverent Shad. Okay. I have to remember that. It's kind of a mouthful, but that's okay. And Reese, in addition to all of these different avenues, you were also in academia as well, right? You're an academic, right?
Yeah, I did. I was a college professor for 20 years. I did 7 years at the Parsons School of Design in New York City, and then I got recruited to teach, to develop programs and teach with the City University of New York. I haven't been living in New York all that time. I was living upstate and commuting down. I have to be in the woods at all times these days.
Yeah, I don't blame you. Yeah, yeah. But again, it makes for a very diverse background and a lot of different elements that can enter into your creative process, I would imagine, right? I mean,
I think that's really necessary to have a lot of, for me, I guess it's also, you know, when I was a kid, they used to call me hyperactive. And
they have a special room for you. Yeah.
Oh boy, did they. Separate you, my school, they had like the A group, the B group, and then there was us. They put us in another room and tried to forget about it. I guess we'd call it ADHD, whatever. I mean, I tend to do a lot of things at the same time. Like today, before you called me,
yes,
I was down in the basement repairing a friend's guitar. I was up in the attic recording a song that I wrote with Fred Kohler the other day. Mm-hmm. I was editing a website, and I was trying to repair some trim in the dining room. You know, literally all these four things are going on at the same time as I'm buzzing up and down stairs and flying all over the place. Well, I create that way as well. And it comes from a lot of different sources of information, you know, and I think that's why I became an academic, is because I wanted to study a lot of different disciplines.
And you're a luthier. Is that the word? Luthier?
Luthier, yeah.
Luther,
yeah.
Lex Luthor. No, Luther. Yeah, you
it's
make Luthier, guitars.
You're like Y-U-R at the end. Yeah.
Okay, you make guitars. Yeah. Okay.
Plus, I saw you design board games. That's pretty cool.
I've created a bunch of board games to help with STEM teaching. I work with a bunch of students on a National Science Foundation grant where we created games to help middle schoolers throughout the Department of Education in New York City master science and mathematical issues.
Hey, that's a great way to learn. I wish I'd had a teacher
I think we need one of those board games because I'm terrible in science and math.
We probably
I could send some down for you.
Would it help? I mean, really, because my intellect level is that of a middle. Well, it's not even that. It's more elementary school. But yeah, I mean, I was always terrible.
You need to start. Yeah, with a lower grade game if you got one.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'll start at the beginning. I will. But it's amazing all these things that you're involved with. And I mean, are you still able to find focus when you have to set your mind to a specific task, like writing a song or making a guitar or doing the academic work? You're still able to focus despite the fact you're doing 18 things at one time?
Yeah, actually, I think if I have more, if I have a desk that's got three projects going, I can focus on any one of them a little bit easier, a little bit more easily than if I only have one thing at a time.
Really?
But yeah, so, but at the same time, I always end up producing a lot of different things. So I guess I find a way to ride through it and to, you know, be productive. But I do like to have three things at least going on at the same time.
That's amazing. And you have a new album coming out soon, right? I mean, tell us about that. Give us a little hint so what that's all about.
We're currently mixing the next album, which is going to be called The Galahad Blues.
All right.
And it's loosely based on an idea I had to repopulate or to reconsider the Knights of the Round Table as mobsters in the late 30s, early 40s in Chicago, and what these guys would be up to if they weren't, you know, upstanding citizens, but rather just the opposite. And so a bunch of the songs in the album are from a musical that I've been writing about that. And so that's about six of the 11 songs. And the other songs are just newer material. And it's with my band, The Conversations, playing, which is Carlos Valdez on percussion and Jeff Link on bass. And my dear and oldest pal in music, Rob Kovacs on drums. We've been playing together professionally for 30 years.
Wow.
And so the four of us went to the studio and cut about eight tracks, and then I did a couple solo, and then I brought some guys, some other people in. I mean, Larry Campbell's playing on it. Ira Coleman is playing on it. Some really cool folks, Jimmy Weider and the Weight Band are playing on it. So lots of different guests on the record too. But it really kind of revolves around a five or six songs that really are, I don't know, it's kind of noir stories. And they exist independently, but when you see them side by side, you kind of can see the thread of connection, and it kind of brings it to another level for you, I hope.
So what's the status of this musical? I mean, you have plans going forward to do a tryout somewhere? What's the status of that?
Well, the script, or what they call the book. Is about 90% done.
Okay.
I have a couple of threads that I need to wrap up. I've been applying for grants with various, national arts organizations to hopefully fund the development of a stage production, or at least a test, and to get some folks in theater to help with me, help me make this. I've been doing it by myself up until now. And so I really kind of need some other eyes on it and stuff that, really have more stage experience than I do. I've done some music for theater, but I've never created a production all on my own like this. So this is kind of a big project for me.
Do you also go out and tour? I know you do. Apparently you were down here and you did our Songs and Stories series, but
that was a blast.
Well, thank you. We had a great time with you. Yeah. So, but how do you find time to go out and perform with all these things you're doing?
Well, actually going out and performing means, traveling.
Yes.
A long time.
Yes.
And then sitting and waiting for a long time, and then getting up on stage and getting to play for, 45 minutes, 2 hours, 3 hours, maybe max.
We gave you an hour and a half, 45 minutes, Reese, just so you know. And we didn't keep you waiting. We did not keep you waiting.
But that's what we do, right? A lot of it is, get there, do a sound check and then go find something to do for 2 hours. Well, one of the things that I find to do is sit down with my laptop and write, or read through a manuscript and try to correct it, or dream up a new game design, or right? This is a podcast. I'm not really sure who the audience is and how I should be careful of my language.
We can bleep. Yeah, this isn't fine. Live.
Okay.
This
so you might have live. To bleep this. All but right. For years, I toured with a band that the motto of the band was "Friends don't let friends drive like assholes," which meant
wow.
I was not allowed to drive because apparently I was too aggressive of a driver.
Well, now you tell me. I was driving with you all over when you were visiting here. Now you tell me.
Well, you know, I've gotten better. But yeah. the point is that when I made at first, when they told me that I was a little upset, it was a bummer. It's like, really? What? And so they wouldn't let me drive. Well, guess what? After a while, I realized, oh, that means I get to be sitting in the back of my laptop writing or reading a book or doing like. So suddenly travel time became very, very productive. So touring, all that to say, touring is actually a very productive time in my life. And if I'm, you know, on a plane or if I love to travel by train. If I can go by train, then I've got a lot of work time that I can sit at my computer and start writing something out.
Do you ever relax? Do you ever relax? I mean,
that is relaxing.
All right. Cause you're obviously, you're either a multitasker or just a show off. Come on, Reese. Are you really?
I think I'm both.
Okay.
I do get on stage pretty regularly. Right. But yeah, no, I'm definitely a multitasker, but I don't. Yeah, I can't. I'm too fidgety. I got to do something.
Well, you know, when it translates on stage, you're such an emphatic performer. You put so much life and emotion and emphasis into your work on stage. It really is striking. I mean, that energy is very obvious, you know. So
I appreciate you saying that.
Well,
I really love performing. You know, actually, that's, I haven't always loved performing. For the longest time, I didn't like it. And it's really only been in like the last 5 years that I find it truly pleasurable to get up on stage. Part of it is just I've kind of grown into myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not trying to, I mean, for the longest time, I was trying to figure out what people wanted. And at this point, I'm kind of like, I hope they like what I'm given. And if they don't, well, you know, there's somebody else down the block singing a song that they can go listen to. But I'm going to pour my heart into it and just try to enjoy this as much as possible. And I really, really love it now. And I think it's been a change so that you see that emphasis, that energy really is important to me. And I really appreciate that because I'm trying to be focused and in my own skin in a comfortable way that I can put these stories across properly.
Yeah, you do it. And the audience loved it. The audience you really connect. And that's so important.
Yeah. And you say you're having fun. And that's something I used to do, some artist development. And that was one thing we would ask, you know, someone that got interested in it was in the music, say, hey, what are you doing this for? If they didn't say, because I love it, you know, we knew it wasn't going to work. So,
yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like, I've always loved making music. It's just getting up in front of people and reproducing music that I think that was where the disconnect was for the longest time. And part of it was because we were putting out records and then trying to reproduce the record every night on stage.
Right.
And quite frankly, that does not interest me anymore. Every time I sit down to sing songs with my band, I'll get you. I mean, if you pay attention to the band as I'm playing, they will. When I start a song, you'll see somebody's eyebrow go up, and what they're saying is, "Oh, we're going to do it that way tonight." You know, there's a point that I started embracing. I think early 20th century jazz. Not bop jazz, not like let's be really, you know, kind of outside the tonal landscape. Let's change things up. I'm not interested in that, but I am interested in feeding off the moment and having a level of creativity enter every different night. And at this point, when I do it by myself, which is what you saw the other night, the band, if they had been there, would also see that I've been playing it very differently, one song or another. And it's, I don't know, I think that might add to the emotional connection for me. But I'm no longer trying to do karaoke of myself. And it's, that was a really, really important step to go, okay, I'm just going to go up there and I'm actually even going to bring a songbook up. And I don't know what song I'm going to end the night with when I start a set. The audience is going to change how I'm going through the set because of how they're reacting. If they're if they're responding only to the energetic tunes, if they are really hearing the more emotional stuff, well, then I'm going to put, I can change that up. So I have a book in front of me that is a catalog of over 175 songs that I can pick from. And quite frankly, at my age, I can't remember all those damn lyrics. So, yeah. So I can page to it. I can see the lyrics. And if I need to, I can read them. But usually, you know, I just kind of use that as a placeholder. But, oh, my God, it was so freeing when I finally accepted the fact that maybe I can't remember my own records. And maybe I don't want to reproduce them anymore. I just want to have a moment with this audience that is as pure as I can make it. And it's been, I guess it's really all comes back to me just being more comfortable in my skin. And that's how it happened.
Yeah.
It's so spontaneous. And I dare say that no two shows are the same, right? I mean, nothing in stone. Yeah.
That's the idea. No, it's not going to be, if you're going to, show up a week later and see the band, we're not going to play the same set of songs. But also, we're not going to, even if those songs that we did play before, we're likely to improvise wholly different midsections, or we might find suddenly everybody feels a groove and we look at each other. I mean, when I play with my band, I hardly ever am up front with a band behind me, which is the way you traditionally see a singer-songwriter. I actually like most, if the theater or venue will allow for this situation, I like to be in a semicircle where we're facing each other. The audience gets to look in, but the musicians are looking at each other and responding in real time to each other. Hmm. And it's just wild. It's so much cooler to play that way. And the audience that feels it, they vibe on it. It's pretty, I cannot even begin to tell you guys how much fun I'm having doing this again. And I avoided
obvious.
The music.
It's obvious in your voice and your mannerisms how much fun you're having.
Yeah. Well, sometimes I get bored with my own songs. So I don't want to play them the same way after so long,
Well, that's it. Right. Exactly. Yeah, I mean, you've got to keep it fresh, right? Because that's the first thing that I think an audience reads is when you're not excited about what you're there to present. Yeah. It's like, oh, I'm doing this again. And there was a time in my life where that's what we did. We did the same, 12 songs for 6 months at a stretch, every gig. And sometimes we get to do 24 songs if we had a double set, but. Yeah. It was just boom, boom, boom. And it felt like it was industrial.
Yeah, that's genius. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, it's just, but it's so rare to find that spark and to find a performer who's really ready to go out and take some chances and express themselves in such a way as to not make it, a moot point every time. I mean, I think it's really special. I think really different. Yeah. So, I mean, Billy, you know all about that. Billy, of course, is an artist. He just released his first album, and
I was vibing on that last night, Billy. Thank you so much.
Hey, I appreciate you listening to it, man. I loved your energy, even as a solo artist. We have on the weekend shows where we have our crowd is trained to, more into being used to a full band. So when I have a solo artist come in, sometimes they think, what, we're getting cheated here, you know? but then I think you're one of the few that you just have the energy and ability to entertain. I think your experience really shows when you're up there performing. So I have to have you down sometime for a weekend show.
Yeah.
I would love that.
I would love that. Yeah. And bring the band. Who's that in the background there? I hear
that. So I think that what we have here is a dog policing the front walk from about two stories down. Yeah, I'm up in the attic right now, and one of my dogs is barking at somebody walking by. I'm sorry.
Well, that's okay. We welcome any outside comments. and if your wife was there, well, she's probably in the midst of being silent for a week. We would invite her to join in. By the way, I'd like you to please send me the information about the silent retreat. I'd like to pass that on to my wife. Oh, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. A week of silence.
The thing is that, for me, it's like the house is silent. Well, now I got a dog up here with a squeaky toy. This is great.
Oh, yeah. I hear the squeaky toy.
Yeah, hold on. Let me kick this adorable animal out. Sorry.
No, my dog has a squeaky toy. It's adorable. It's adorable. Not on our account. Now he's going to be sitting out.
I can't tell you.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how many times that dog has like walked in on me, you know, putting down an acoustic guitar track in here, because he can open the door. There's like a handle that he can get with his paw. Just plows in with a squeaky toy.
He wants to contribute to the session. He wants a credit on the album. What's the dog's name?
That's Nash, short for Nash Vegas.
All right.
He adopted from Tennessee.
Okay. Well, Nat on squeaky toy. I mean, that's a legitimate credit there, you know? So put him on the album.
Yeah. Well, hey, we wish we had more time, but unfortunately we got to head out to the station here in a minute. So we may have to wrap it up here. And
I really appreciate you guys having me on, man.
It's a pleasure.
Yeah, I mean, that flew by, didn't it? 30 minutes.
Yeah. Well, we're professional, Shad, and, you know, we have a very strict timeline.
Yeah, right.
No. I understand.
Well, actually, if it wasn't for this show, but.
Got to warm up the station.
So anyway, I'm going to do a little outro here, and how can folks find you now?
Okay, so if people want to find me, it's pretty straightforward. My first name is Reese, R-E-E-S. So that's the hardest part, is just remembering I don't have an E at the end of my name. And my last name is Shad, S-H-A-D as in David. And then if you go to reeshadmusic.com, you can get all my vitals. You can see all our videos. You can connect to all our music that we're making. In fact, I'm about to do, and I think I told you about this before, Lee, I'm about to do a recording project with Least of All Records. Mm-hmm. And so they're offering one of a kind handmade vinyl records. I perform a song, it goes down to a platter of vinyl, one record per song. And so if you were to go and pre-order one of these at Least of All Records, you'd be able to have literally a singular performance come to you on vinyl. Which means I'll be in the studio all day making people records. It's going to be a blast. And then you can follow Reshad and the Conversations on Facebook or Instagram too.
Cool.
Well, this has been a great conversation. So we're automatically part of the Conversations.
Yeah. That you are. That you are, my brother.
Okay.
All right, man. Well, hey, thanks a lot. We really enjoyed talking to you and loved having you at the station also recently. So, all right, well, don't hang up yet. Let's do our outro, and we'll be back with you. So,
don't hang up.
Well, big thanks to Reese Shad and our host, Lee Zimmerman. Check out Lee's new book, 30 Years Behind the Glass. It's really good. Jim Gaines. And it's available on Amazon. Also, please like, share, and subscribe to My Backstage Pass on your favorite platform. We'll see y'all next time. Happy trails.
Happy trails.
Yeah.